Ah, Monday. At least we have left the typically dreaded Monday morning, and now we're making our way out of what's most likely the dullest day of your work week. I'm sure you know the old joke. What do you call a person who's happy on Monday? Retired. Happy on a Monday? You must be retired. Or maybe you moms and dads who spent the weekend with kids running around screaming at their brothers and sisters, and or at you, are happy when Monday comes because it means they go back to school. Let their teachers deal with them. Nevertheless, I hope you've been looking forward to our time together. Now, last week, I gave you an introduction to God is by telling you about some of my convictions and then inviting you into a conversation about the existence of God. We looked at Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1 and read, "In the beginning, God." I said the very first reality we learn about God is that God exists, and he exists before the beginning. God is pre-existing, and I gave you three reasons why the pre-existence of God is so important. And all of that is available on the podcast if you missed it. If you have questions or comments about this, please email me, Mark, M-A-R-K, at markaswallow.com. This week, as we continue to explore the opening phrase of the Bible together, I want to share with you a second insight into who God is. Let me share this with you now so that we will always keep this in front of us all week, because we're going to start to move into some other biblical texts, and I do not want you to get lost in the detail and forget to look up so that you can see the big picture from time to time. If I teach this right, you will be able to tell the forest from the trees. God is one. God is one. Beginning today, this is what we're going to see about God. Now, last week I referred to this by saying that in the beginning, God shows us that the name God is singular. Not God's plural, but God singular, so that God is one. He is all that exists in the beginning. No other divine being, no multiple gods, just God. So let's explore this in greater detail. And to do that, go back with me to Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1. By now, you likely have these first four words there memorized, which is a good thing. In the beginning, God. In those four words sits a monumental name, and it is the name God. And while it may be tempting to just breeze right over God in this text, we cannot do it. We've got to stop and ask a crucial question. What does the Bible mean by God? I mean, you read God there, or for those of you driving, when I say God, what comes to your mind? We can play the word association game. I say God, and what do you say? Whatever you say will tell the rest of us something about who you believe God is. So I say God, and someone might say distant, or someone else might reply love. Maybe another person offers non-existent, or creator. Maybe a Christian will say father. I could imagine judge as a word people associate with God. Maybe you're saying something different to your radio. My point is, when we read the word God in Genesis 1, we have to define what we mean by God, because trust me, not all of us mean the same thing. But remember my task here. It's to go to my source for telling you who God is, that is the Bible, and to unpack for you how the Bible defines God. Most of you know that the Old Testament Bible was originally written in Hebrew, and I'll start by telling you that the Hebrew word here for God is Elohim. Elohim. This is a Jewish name for God. Moses just presents Elohim, and notice how he doesn't define or defend him. Genesis is not a legal brief for the defense of God, in which Moses serves as God's lawyer in the courtroom of human opinion. God doesn't need defending. Moses simply names God and assumes his existence. This reminds me of the profound statement of the living God in Isaiah 43:10, when God speaks of himself. Isaiah 43:10 says, "And understand that I am he. Before me there was no God formed, and there will be none after me. I am he." That's just the way it is. The God of Genesis 1:1 is God alone, Elohim. And yet within that name dwells all the richness of God. Elohim is so deep in meaning that defining what the Bible means by it can actually be difficult. When we read the English name God in this sentence, or Elohim in the Hebrew, what does this mean? Believe me when I tell you I've wrestled deeply with how to present the name Elohim to you. I don't want to spend the week, or the year for that matter, giving you a Hebrew language lesson. But in order to understand Elohim, we have to know something about Hebrew grammar here. And I want to say that I'm indebted to Paul Sumner for his very helpful online article, Elohim in Biblical Context. Now, grammar. A lot of you might be like, what? During the many years I lived in Hong Kong, one of the things I learned is that native English speakers, those of us who grew up naturally speaking and writing in English, have very little clue as to the rules of English grammar. Americans living overseas generally have no idea. Come on now, native English speakers. Can you easily identify nouns, pronouns, adjectives and adverbs, conjunctions and participles? But those of you who learned English as a second language tend to know the rules. You had no choice but to actually sit down and learn them. Am I right? So grammar is perceived as scary, boring, and irrelevant to a lot of people. But in interpreting the Bible, it is essential that we, from time to time, get into the grammar. Here it is, Hebrew grammar. Okay, let's get started. First, you need to know that the transliteration of the Hebrew word Elohim is spelled E-L-O-H-I-M. E-L-O-H-I-M. My next point tells you why this is important. So second, let's break down Elohim. The first two letters in English are E-L, E-L-L. This is the root of the word, and those of you who know the Bible well will automatically see this root in some other names for God. Think El Elyon, God Most High, or El Shaddai, God Almighty. Third, Elohim is a plural, masculine noun. In English, the word is spelled E-L-O-H-I-M, and the I-M at the end of Elohim makes it plural. But listen carefully, not plural in the sense of more than one. Did you get that? Not plural in the sense of more than one, but rather what linguists call a plural of honor. A plural of honor. So the Hebrews added I am here as a way to give the highest, greatest, fullest honor to God. Grammatically in Hebrew, the plural ending I am actually gives the greatest honor that can ever be given to God. Fourth, we need to know that in the Bible, Elohim is used as a general term for deity. In Genesis 1, verse 1, God is the one true God. But then the word Elohim is used again elsewhere for false gods and goddesses, small g, angels, and persons in leadership such as kings and judges. Let me give you an example so you can see what's coming as we continue to study the Bible. I've got to be consistent. That is, what I teach here has to align with what is taught elsewhere in the Bible. So I'll use Genesis 31 as my example. In Genesis chapter 31 and verse 30, Laban asks Jacob, "Why did you steal my gods?" The word God, small g, is from the root word Elohim, and it means household idols, false gods. Laban is not asking, "Why did you steal my one true God?" He is asking, "Why did you steal my idols?" So taking into account that Elohim in Genesis 1:1 is a plural masculine noun, and given that Elohim is used elsewhere in the Bible, not only for God, but for false gods, as well as angels and persons in leadership such as kings and judges, where does this leave us? I believe Elohim is best understood when we understand Elohim to mean the greatest God of all. The greatest God of all. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 17 captures this perfectly. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great, the mighty, the awesome God. If you're not looking at Deuteronomy 10, 17, look at it later and you'll notice that God of gods is God, capital G, of gods, small g. Lord of lords is Lord, capital L, of lords, small l. This God described in Genesis 1 is God of all gods and Lord of all lords. Later, the Bible will describe him as King of Kings. I think of the glorious Messiah composed by Handel in 1741 and that thrilling line, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, he shall reign forever and ever. Elohim is the greatest God of all. End of Hebrew grammar lesson. Oh, I hope you're following me closely thus far. And if you are, then your logic tells you that the statement, Elohim is the greatest God of all, might cause you to ask, is there more than one God? Now, the answer according to the Bible is no. As we said last week and affirmed earlier, there is only one God. So why does Moses, who wrote Genesis, choose to use Elohim here instead of another name for God, say Yahweh, that we'll eventually get to? I think the use of Elohim here is intentional. The Bible is being anticipatory of the culture in which the ancient Jews, that is, the first followers of God, lived. And here, right at the beginning by choosing Elohim, the Bible also speaks directly to our culture today. And tomorrow, I'll say more what I mean about the Bible being anticipatory of these cultures. So please join me tomorrow as we continue to learn that God is one.